Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Land of Sky Regional Council COVID-19 call. We appreciate everyone joining us today. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, and we wish you a wonderful holiday season. Just a few ground rules before we begin today's call. I have placed everyone on mute, and we don't allow screen sharing for these calls. But if you can, if you have any comments or any questions you'd like to make, please enter that through the chat function. These calls are recorded, and we try to place the archives of the calls on our Land of Sky website. So you can go to landofsky.org and visit our COVID-19 page. Today, we're honored to have again with us Drew Christie with the Governor's Office. Drew will give us an update and let us know the latest developments from Raleigh and from Governor Cooper, and then we're scheduled to have North Carolina Treasurer Dale Falwell with us. So I don't think he's joined yet, but we have several people still joining the call. So I'll turn it over to Drew right now to give us an update from Governor Cooper's office. And again, Drew, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Nathan, for having me, and thank you to Land of Sky Regional Council for hosting these meetings. I'll go over some numbers here first, and then I'll speak on what Governor Cooper and Dr. Cohen talked about on Tuesday. So as of today, there have been a total of 377,231 total cases of coronavirus, and as yesterday's total cases are a staggering 5,637. So our trends are not looking in the right direction. We're going completely in the wrong direction here. There have been a total of 5.4 million tests completed. There are currently 2,101 people hospitalized due to COVID-19. And I think our total positivity rate is currently sitting just over 10%. So we need to be extra diligent and remember our three W's: to wear a face covering, to wait 6 feet apart, and to wash our hands frequently. We've got to make sure that we get this under control right now while the vaccine is in process of getting distributed to states. So we've got to make sure that we get this under control. And I'll cover more about the vaccines here in just a minute. So moving on to some additional numbers here, looking at unemployment data, there have currently been $8.83 billion paid out in state and federal unemployment benefits. There have been 2.85 million claims filed from March 15th through December 2nd. 928,603 claimants have been paid. There are currently, and this is good news here, there are only 7,669 people pending resolution for state benefits. So that's good news. DES is continuing to work through all these cases and get the monies paid out as necessary. So moving on to the governor's press conference on Tuesday, he talked about that there's a safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines that should be available soon. And North Carolina has been working for months to develop a distribution plan so that we can hit the ground running when these vaccines arrive. Our state is preparing to receive vaccines that require ultra cold storage. So that's the Pfizer vaccine right now is what North Carolina is scheduled to receive. Healthcare providers with these ultra cold storage capabilities have been identified across the state. The COVID-19 vaccine will be free regardless of whether someone has health insurance or not. So everybody in the state will have the ability to get the vaccine for free. healthcare providers are being enrolled in the COVID-19 vaccination program based on their ability to reach priority populations. And those priority populations right now are those who are at risk of exposure, like healthcare workers, and those who are at risk of severe illness. These vaccines have been these vaccines have made progress so quickly because of significant improvements in science and technology, all while following safety protocols. Researchers like we have right here in North Carolina have been working on new vaccine technology for the past several years in preparation for a global pandemic like this. When it comes to determining safety, before the FDA will authorize these vaccines, an independent advisory board will review the data for safety. This advisory board has no loyalties to any company, political administration, or individual. The board exists to review the vaccine trials independently. So that way we can make sure that nothing is being rushed here in the state, that this vaccine, what the data shows from the companies is independently evaluated and reviewed, and safely we can move forward distributing the vaccine. As the states are shouldering the job of vaccine distribution, we need more support and resources from Washington, D.C. This must be a priority as Congress considers its end-of-year bills. Within the next few weeks, there will be likely at least one approved vaccine. And with hope so close on the horizon, we have the tools to make sure that we slow the virus. And again, I've mentioned the three W's. Those are our most important tools. Wearing a cloth face covering, washing your hands frequently and for at least 20 seconds, and waiting 6 feet apart from everyone else. Governor Cooper and DHHS Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen also underscore the need for people to wear a mask anytime they gather with people outside of their immediate household. So again, whether you're riding in a car with your neighbor, wear a mask. Whether you're in your household and a neighbor comes over, it's fine to have them inside, but everybody needs to wear a cloth face covering. Even if you're outside the 6 foot distance range, it's always important to wear that mask. With the holiday season underway, DHHS has released health guidance to help people celebrate as safely as possible without spreading the virus. And lastly, DHHS continues to update the COVID-19 dashboard with more data, including county level data. You can find that all the data on the DHHS dashboard. And you can go to COVID-19.ncdhhs.gov to find all the relevant data. And so with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you. And if anybody has any questions for me or the governor's office, please leave it in the chat box and I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you so much, Drew. We appreciate that update from Governor Cooper's office. It's my understanding we're still under the restriction of for mass gatherings of 10 individuals. Is that correct? I know a lot of our local governments and things, some of them are trying to have some in-person meetings, but I think that is still the restriction?
That is correct, and that runs through next Friday, December the 11th.
And you mentioned the Pfizer vaccine. A local company, Thermo Fisher, makes the ultra low temperature freezers, and so I know their business has been really strong trying to support that vaccine distribution. So I don't know if you have any update I know there was a lot of back and forth between the General Assembly and the Governor's Office, Office of State Budget Management. But have you heard any updates on the broadband deployment as far as the GREAT Act or other funding? That there was some legal concerns whether they could use CARES Act funding.
I have not heard anything more on that front. I know that the legislature is out sine die, so only if a special session is called will they come back this year to look at anything. But from my understanding, that looks very slim that would happen. So more likely than not, it would be based on next year for additional funding for the GREAT Grant Supplemental Program.
Well, thank you so much, Drew. I didn't ask Chris Wall or Andy Munn with EQV Strategic to come give us an update. There has been some discussion. There may be a additional CARES Act package at the federal level. It seems like there might be some movement in that direction, but we'll just wait and see. We'll try to have Chris Wall or Andy give us an update, but it's my understanding from them, unless there's additional federal legislation, General Assembly probably won't go back into session until the 21 session. So Drew, thank you so much for the update from the governor's office. We're honored to have Treasurer Dale Falwell with us. Treasurer Falwell leads the state treasurer's office, and that's a critically important office in North Carolina. It's one of the most influential elected positions really anywhere in state government, not only in North Carolina, but nationwide. Treasurer Falwell leads the, oversees the state teacher and state employees retirement system, manages over $100 billion in assets for that system, oversees the state health plan for our local governments. He oversees the local government commission, which regulates local government finance. And I'm sure he can give us an update on that and many other things. So Treasurer Falwell, I think I've unmuted you, so you can go ahead. And again, we're glad that you're with us today. We send our greetings from Western North Carolina, and you're going to be serving your second term as state treasurer. So we congratulate you on that. But good afternoon, and thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you, Nathan. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Great. It's really great to be with you, especially since Nathan's always told me there's only two types of people in North Carolina, mountain people and people who want to be mountain people. So I'm glad to be with some mountain people today. I'm not glad that I'm not consuming any of my father's pizza or straightaway grill hamburgers at lunch or dinner tonight. That would just make all this just a little bit better, but maybe someday soon. So thank you for having me. Over the next few minutes, I could get emotional. There are things happening in our state right now that are worth getting emotional about. I'll be getting highly mathematical for any of you who are on the Zoom call who, if math makes you nauseous, you probably should Zoom out now. But in the spirit of the land of the sky and your regional council, I will not be getting political. So I'm going to give you a sort of an overview of where we are from a balance sheet standpoint, touch on some of the issues that Nathan just mentioned about the responsibilities of the as keeper of the public purse and the state treasurer of North Carolina. Sometimes get asked, do I sign the $1 bill? And the answer is no. It's a logical question. It's where people most often see the word treasurer. We don't sign the $1 bill, but just with the pension plan that Nathan just mentioned, we manage the 26th largest pool of $1 bills in the entire world. Just the pension plan is four times larger than the state budget. And when you add up all the responsibilities of the state treasurer's office, it's eight times as large as the state budget. And with that, a few months ago, we applied for, along with OSBM and the controller's office, for the COVID CARE Act money that Drew sort of mentioned a moment or two ago. We applied for and received over $4 billion of COVID CARE Act money. And in true Mountain conservative spirit, as soon as that money hit the treasurer's office, we put it into interest-bearing accounts. But very quickly thereafter, $471 million of that $4 billion was swept out for the benefit of three counties and one city. Now, the three counties are Wake, Guilford, and Mecklenburg, and the one city is Charlotte. Now, nobody in Charlotte ever asked me this question, and you know the rivalry between Charlotte and Raleigh. But other people do ask me, why didn't Raleigh get any of that money? And the answer is mathematical. There was a floor of 500,000 population set on this special allocation. And therefore, there are a lot of people in Raleigh, but as of the last census in the city limits of Raleigh, there aren't 500,000 people. So $471 million got swept out for the benefit of three counties and one city. And then the other $3.5 billion, I believe, Nathan, every member, Kathy, of the House and the Senate, Democrat and Republican, voted for two separate COVID CARE Act pieces of legislation. And then I think the governor signed both of those. So that's where we are from the COVID CARE Act money. Now, you've heard and you know intuitively, because you have your finger on the pulse of local government, that the cost of public education, public safety, public works, and public roads have increased since St. Patrick's Day, but the revenue to pay for all that has gone down. So on top of the $4 billion that we received in the COVID CARE Act money, we also have over $2 billion left as a budget surplus from the last fiscal year, which will be desperately needed. As people have been locked down, they can't move, and when they can't move, they can't consume, and when they can't consume, they're not generating the income, the gas, the sales, and the property occupancy taxes, which are necessary to fund the things that your council cares so much about: public education, public safety, public works, and public roads. So we have about a $2 billion surplus as the General Assembly comes back in to deal with the next biennium. On top of that, it's hard to believe, it's only by grace of God, that we're this far down in the storm alphabet and North Carolina not have been more widely impacted than it has. So we still have over $1 billion in the rainy day fund. And then on top of that, Drew mentioned this a moment ago, this is a far different story than 7 years ago. We still have well over $2 billion in unemployment trust fund money, not highway trust fund, unemployment trust fund money. And that is far different. As you may remember, Barbara, 7 years ago, when I was in charge of the unemployment agency, we had $2.7 billion in debt, not surplus. So what that means, when Drew was giving these numbers about backlogs and paying people, when I was in charge of that agency, every time we paid out a benefit, we had to borrow the money from Uncle Sam to pay benefits. So we're in a far different situation this time, with not a $2.7 billion debt, but over $2 billion surplus still remaining after all the numbers that you recently heard. That's where we are from a balance sheet standpoint. The pension plan, there are a lot of people on this call who are directly or indirectly connected with the pension plan, either through the Elgers, the local, or the Teasers, which is the state. It's hard to believe, Nathan, that over a year ago, Moody's, which is to me what a rating agency would be, a credit score would be to you, Kathy, or what a sanitation grade would be to a restaurant, Moody's came out and said this pension plan in North Carolina was number one in the country in terms of its ability to stay funded during an economic downturn. And who could have foreseen what has happened to us since St. Patrick's Day, much less a year ago, in terms of economic volatility? And we're very pleased to report that the pension plan just crossed $112 billion. It has never seen that level in the history of North Carolina. And even though 85% of our employees are working remotely, we remain in the check delivery business. 3 days ago, we deposited nearly $550 million worth of pension checks. And that represents 1 month gross pension benefit. $550 million, not for healthcare or pharmaceuticals for public service workers, just for the gross pension benefit, which is over $6.5 billion a year. So you're probably very quickly getting an idea that because of the amount of money we manage and us being eight times as large as the state budget, when we succeed, every branch of government succeeds. And when we don't do well, every branch of government doesn't do well. So the pension plan's in great shape, and very pleased to report. Not only is, did Moody's say, we're number one in the country in terms of our ability to stay funded during an economic downturn, the other good news is that CEM benchmarking just put us in the zero percentile. Now, Zach, I know you didn't fall in this category, but when I was coming through grammar school, I stayed in the zero percentile a long time. But when it comes to the expenses of running a pension plan, being in the zero percentile is the highest score you can get, which means we had the lowest cost of running this 26th largest pool of public money in the world than any of the peers that we are stacked up against, either in the country or internationally. So I'm giving all this good news to you about the pension plan because A, 1 out of 10 adult North Carolinians are on the pension plan. But more importantly, when Moody's looks at our credit score to issue debt, and by the way, we've issued $1.6 billion worth of debt at the state level out of the treasurer's office in the last 32 days, $1.6 billion. It's $400 million for the Connect NC voter-approved bonds that were approved 4 years ago. Those went out at a little over 1.4% for a 20-year average yield. We refinanced $550 million worth of turnpike bonds at a net present value of about $14 million. And then finally, after a year and a half of brokenness at the North Carolina Department of Transportation, we were able to issue $700 million worth of built NC debt at a little over 1.53% on a 20-year average. So my point of discord wrapping all that up for you is that the state's in great financial shape. I wouldn't trade places with any other state treasurer in North Carolina, in the country. I was on the phone this morning at 6:15 a.m. with the treasurer of South Carolina. And I can tell you that I don't know the exact number, but I can tell you that there are states that border North Carolina that are in danger of going into negative territory in terms of their unemployment trust funds. And for you business owners on this call, you know for a fact that when a state goes into negative territory and has to borrow that money from the federal government, then the SUTA, which is the state unemployment taxes, and the FUTA, which is the federal unemployment taxes, the surcharges start to kick in. It's hopefully the most perverse thing you'll hear all day. We're raising payroll taxes on people while we're asking them to retain and hire people. North Carolina, I can pretty much assure you, is not going to be in that situation as it has been for the first 14 years of this century. Also, put this in context, when I was talking to Curtis this morning, the pension plan that I just referred to is nearly 88% funded. I think the South Carolina pension system is 63% funded. The Alabama retirement system is 64% funded. One of the Kentucky general government retirement systems is only 20% funded. So you don't expect a motorcyclist like myself to be quoting a philosopher like T.S. Eliot, but he once said, hell is where nothing connects. All this stuff connects, how well-funded your pension plan is, how conservatively you manage the state budget. It all eventually connects back into how much we pay to borrow, interest rates we pay to borrow money. And even though there's a diversity of opinion on this Zoom today about any different subject, I can almost guarantee you 100% certainty that everybody on this Zoom feels like that if a state or a city or a county has to borrow money, that being able to do it at the lowest possible interest rates is good for whatever it is you're investing in, public education, public safety, public works, or public roads. My fear, my frustration, we appreciate Congress sending that money down. But as you know very well, that when money comes from Washington to Raleigh and Raleigh to other parts of the state, whatever strings attached to it in Washington stays attached to it in Buncombe County or Henderson County or Transylvania County. One of the strings was that the money had to be used for COVID-related activities. What in this world, starting with the fact I had to bring my own sandwich to your meeting today, what in this world, in our world today, is not COVID related? I wish they would have removed that little string so that the states, the counties, and cities could have used that money to backfill their budget shortfalls because of people being locked down, not able to move, not consuming, and not generating the taxes to pay for these important services where the value, I mean, the cost of performing those services has gone up. My fear is for rural North Carolina, and especially for Eastern rural North Carolina. I was the drive-through commencement speaker this year at the Columbia High School in Terrell County, which is the high school that you would ultimately travel through if you were to go from where you are right now to the Outer Banks. I wouldn't suggest getting any sweet tea from Bojangles if you did that because you'd have to stop a lot. But Terrell County is the last county. There were 38 graduates at the only high school commencement and the only high school in the county this year. As a matter of fact, the number of people in this entire county is almost equal to the student faculty population at Myers Park High School in Charlotte. And Patricia, what I haven't told you is that half of the real estate in Terrell County is not taxable. And now the last piece of information is between St. Patrick's Day and July 4th of this year, the sales tax of Terrell County dropped 26%. So hopefully you can very quickly visualize why I'm fearful for rural North Carolina, especially Eastern rural North Carolina. When you have a county, as the county commissioner chair told me earlier this year, I think we might have more bears than we do people. When you have a county with the population of a high school, half the property is not taxable, and the sales taxes dropped 26%. I think, Terry, you can very easily visualize the kind of stress that many of our cities and counties are under. Lastly, because I want to really give you a lot of time for questions, two of the 21 major duties and responsibilities I have as state treasurer and keeper of the public purse is that I chair the state Banking Commission. We've got great state banking commission members that are from out west. There's a great banking program at Western Carolina that I'm very attuned to. But the other responsibility, as Nathan just mentioned, is I'm chair of the local government finance division, LGC. And you may not know the history of that, but that was formed after the bankruptcy of Asheville after the Depression. And now we have over 1,300 entities, Amy, that report to the LGC, 100 counties, 540 cities, water and sewer districts, airport authorities, hospitals, and universities. So we have over 1,300 entities that report to the LGC as a way, as a filter, when they want to go out and borrow money on a tax-free basis. As I close and answer any questions you might have, I just want to say something. Nathan knows me as a person who will say this if it's on my heart. Sometimes it means I don't get invited back to speak the second time, but nevertheless, I say it anyway. People don't give a damn what political party you're a member of right now. There are a lot of people in this state who are facing the highest levels of job, food, health, and now educational insecurity and uncertainty, the likes of which none of them ever imagined, especially all at one time. And what people want out of their elected officials is somebody who would just attack problems and not people and figure out how to advocate, especially for the forgotten woman and the forgotten man of this state. How do I define the forgotten woman and the forgotten man? Someone who has too little money to have political influence, and you know exactly what I'm talking about, too much money sometimes to get the little bit of help they might need. So they spend their entire lives working one or two jobs, working, paying taxes, and praying for a better outcome. And as we head into this holiday season, I want us to especially be thinking about the forgotten woman and the forgotten man of North Carolina.
Treasurer Falwell, thank you so much for being with us today. You We're grateful for your leadership. You mentioned the LGC. We're going through our finishing up our audit process for our council, and we're a local government that is certainly overseen by the LGC. And I was joking with our finance director, you know, the LGC is God when it comes to the finance in North Carolina for local governments. What the LGC says is the way it's going to be. But could you talk about the number of AAA rated local governments? I can't recall the statistic, but North Carolina has something like 20% of all the AAA local governments in the nation, or some number. We're a blessed state, and I think we're one of only 8 states in the country that are still AAA. I may be wrong.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. And sometimes people answer this question with cheese. And what do I mean by that? And my wife has a sign in our kitchen that says, a meal without cheese is like a hug without a squeeze. And everybody likes the taste of cheese. But I tend to answer these types of questions with chalk. Nobody likes chalk. Nobody likes the taste of chalk. But you know what you do with chalk? You write zeros and commas, and you manage billions of dollars, and you solve problems. And so we're very fortunate, as Nathan mentioned, we're one of 13 states that has the AAA bond rating currently. I predict that this time next year it will be less. I'd love for all 50 states to have it, but they don't. We do have a high level of communities who have the AAA bond rating. But going back to the chalk for a moment, not the cheese, we have almost 150 units that are on the watch list or the unit assistance list in North Carolina, counties, cities, water and sewer districts, for example. And this is a very high concern to me. As far as your how you portrayed the local government commission, and I said this week when we had our meeting, when I'm the calm one in the room, something bad's happening. But to my right sits Alder Beth Wood, who is evangelical about local communities being able to get their audits in and having proper reconciliation of their books, especially when they're collecting property taxes. To her right is Secretary of Revenue Penny. To his right is Secretary of State Elaine Marshall, who has a lot of institutional knowledge about local government. And then there's some other citizen appointees. So the LGC is highly important. And we had a fantastic meeting this week, Nathan, with Paul Meyer of the League of Municipalities. I set up this meeting. Kevin Leonard from the County Commission Association, state auditor, myself, some LGC staff. And then at the last half of that meeting, I invited Superintendent-elect Catherine Truitt. The reason is that there's so much getting ready to happen with the pension plan, the experience rating of the pension plan, the lowering of the assumed rate of return of the pension plan, the increase in expenses to local governments and the state itself when we lower the assumed rate of return. I wanted the superintendent of electric public instruction to know how this is going to impact their budget for the next 5 years, how it's going to impact the League of Municipalities budgets, cities budgets, how it's going to impact the county's budgets. So even though I'm one of the 21 major duties and responsibilities that I have is the chair of the LGC, I never miss an opportunity to bring other tangential things into LGC meetings that people just need to be aware of.
Thank you so much, Treasurer Falwell. We had a question in the chat about, is the state looking at a budget shortfall? I know that's traditionally Barry Boardman and the research team at the General Assembly sort of runs through those numbers, but I know we still have a substantial rainy day fund. Still, there's CARES Act money, or there's monies that have been set aside because we got the CARES Act funds. Can you comment on that, or do you have any, is that beyond your purview?
There are two things I would there's two ways I would respond to that. And the first thing I'm going to say biblically would be true yesterday, today, and tomorrow. The last thing anybody needs in anywhere in this country is for elected officials to be commenting on things that they don't absolutely have their finger on the pulse of. And what I mean by that is being the keeper of the public purse and the state treasurer is very much like yoga for me. It's paying attention to your mat and breathing. So the budget shortfalls are not on the mat of the treasurer's office, but I'm hearing from Barry and the legislative staff that they're looking at anywhere between a $2 and $3 billion budget shortfall. And I just hear that from reports similar to the reports that you're hearing.
But the treasurer's office does deal with, I guess, you come out with a report related to state debt capacity and what the capacity of the state to borrow, I think. Is that correct?
That's right. And Barbara probably wishes that the federal government had something called a debt affordability commission. We have a debt affordability commission in North Carolina, which allows myself, the OSBM director, and other appointed people to that commission. We come up with the feasibility of, if you look at the debt capacity of North Carolina, well, just like you would a credit card debt capacity, we look at really what our ceiling needs to be, it's sort of like guardrails on a highway of what our debt capacity is. The North Carolina Department of Transportation maxed out its credit card almost before it overspent their budget $2 billion and eviscerated the billion out of the Highway Trust Fund. That'd be a whole nother Zoom call for me to get into that. But the DOT has maxed out its credit card, generally speaking. And the only thing that's given them more debt capacity right now is lower interest rates versus what was predicted. The general fund debt capacity still has some ceiling left on it as far as the ability to issue debt, but we still have several hundred million dollars worth of GO debt that hasn't been issued from the voter approved connected C bond stuff. And there's also some things that we need to be doing on the local level, like Nathan, I was on the floor of the House when the lottery was approved. When that lottery was approved, 40% of the money from the lottery was supposed to go toward public school construction. Over the 10 years, that got cut in half. This is particularly of interest to Henderson County and Buncombe County and Transylvania County and Madison County and rural North Carolina in general. So one thing I'm going to be working on is to get the lottery proceeds that was initially meant for public school construction to tweak it so that some of the rural communities who may be depopulating and not need to construct schools can actually use it for repair and renovation. I think getting that back up to what the people of North Carolina were told over 10 years ago is a very important thing going forward, as well as transparent health care and lowering the cost of health care.
Well, we're blessed to be in a region where most of our local governments are fairly secure. But, you know, this COVID-19's been a gut punch to everyone. And I think our more rural communities, you know, they weren't booming before COVID-19. A lot of them had just struggled to get back to where they were before the Great Recession. And so, you know, this has certainly been a challenge for them. I know there's been some work in the General Assembly to redirect some additional funding opportunities for those rural counties. But, you know, in our case, for a Transylvania County or Madison County or our smaller municipalities, it's much more challenging for them to meet their needs than, and I'm not saying it's easy for our members at the city of Hendersonville or Asheville or Buncombe County or Henderson County to do that, but they have much more capacity. Some of our small communities, it's just really, you know, they don't have the tax base. A lot of them don't have the retail and, you know, industrial tax base that they once did. And so many of them are mainly residential homes. And so, that's been a definite challenge. I know our friends in Eastern North Carolina. Go ahead.
Let me put that in context, because I spoke to the North Mecklenburg Rotary Club yesterday. And you know, Shiloh and Charlotte, they sound just alike. To some people who pronounce them, it sounds just alike. And they're spelled very similarly. But to your point, Nathan, I can tell you Shiloh and Charlotte are in far different boats right now. And actually, there are Shilohs happening inside the city of Charlotte. There are the same stresses that Shiloh is facing are happening in some neighborhoods inside Charlotte. So this is a very, very big issue. And the other thing, because I don't want to run out of time, and, you know, Vanna White has really gotten my admiration since COVID, since Zoom meetings, because every time I think I'm holding something up correctly, it's backwards or upside down. So I hope you can see this. This is the shape. This is specifically what I'm getting ready to say is directed at your group. This is the shape of North Carolina, obviously. If you imagine this being the shape of California, what you can't imagine is that but for 63 miles, we have as much border with other states as California does. 63 miles. But as smart as you all are, Graham, no one in this Zoom can name a major population center in California that borders another state. Think about yours. Obviously, Asheville, Charlotte, Wilmington, some degree, Rocky Mount, Raleigh, Durham, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, and Boone. My point is that Hayek and von Mises, the famous Austrian economist, taught us that money does not know where the border is. Money will go where it's invited and stay where it's spent. And that's why I get so frustrated with the focus on COVID. And Nathan, and you know this, I was hospitalized at the end of March with a very severe case in intensive care at Babas Hospital with COVID-19 before anybody knew what to do with me. I was asymptomatic. Never had a headache, never had GI, never had loss of taste or smell, never had a temperature, never had a shortness of breath. But my blood ox level was 85. Even while I was on 7 units of oxygen, my blood ox level was 85. My body was rejecting oxygen. So in the words of the country music singer Jamie Johnson, the beautiful song called I've Seen It in Color, I've seen COVID in color, and I appreciate all the emphasis on flattening the healthcare curve, but at the same time, we gotta make sure we're not punishing the healthy of this state. And when you have that much population on the border with other states, you have to have policies that are transparent, data-driven, consistent, where people have the ability to challenge assumptions without somebody getting their feelings hurt or being called political. Because when you have that much border with other states, if people get frustrated and cannot consume a haircut or a hamburger, they're going to drive 16 miles and get a haircut and a hamburger. That's to the detriment of the small business owner in your community and the tax base and the local governments. So I really think about this map a lot and what it really means to have such a wonderful state. But understanding that when you have that much population on border with other states, you cannot be the high cost place to live and do business. You got to be the low cost place to live and do business.
Well, Treasurer Falwell, we're so glad that you're feeling better now. I remember a quote I think I saw from you that when you were in intensive care, you said it took every bit of energy you had to focus on breathing, and each breath was, certainly for all of us, it's a gift from on high. But you've made a wonderful recovery, and I know so many of our neighbors and those across the state now are having to deal with that. Final question, and then I'll let you go. I know you're very busy, but state health plan. I know our state pension fund is one of the best funded in the country. But we have retirement health care obligations, and you now manage the state health plan. Can you speak a bit about state health plan and the work you're doing there?
as healthy as the pension plan is as unhealthy as the state health plan is. As a matter of fact, according to Pew Research a few years ago, the unfunded liability that I inherited in the state health plan placed us right behind the state of Illinois in terms of its insolvency. Now, my wife sometimes, Terry, I ask her, you know, what do people think when they hear me talk about these things? And she said, well, the first thing they think is he serious? Because he's telling us stuff we've never heard. And I said, what about the second 60 seconds? I don't recommend anybody ask their wife this question, by the way. And she says, they want to know how we got there. How do we get there behind Illinois? And the answer is mathematical. For over four decades, after people received 5 years and one day of service in the state of North Carolina, they were ultimately eligible for free lifetime health care. And that eligibility, just like a pension that they were eligible for, the obligation was there, but no money has ever been set aside for that. So what we're trying to do with the state health plan is take advantage of our largeness on behalf of those that teach, protect, and otherwise serve. It's very controversial. As former Congressman John Lewis used to say, it's okay to get into good trouble every day. And I've gotten into a lot of good trouble because my goal is to eliminate secret contracts in North Carolina for healthcare. Just close your eyes, because you'll get a goosebump after you hear what I'm getting ready to say about, imagine the economic gold rush that could come to North Carolina if we were known as the state of transparent healthcare. What do I mean by that? We spent $340 million last year with UNC Healthcare on behalf of those that teach, protect, and serve, just UNC Healthcare. When I sent them a simple letter and asked them how much, and I know what I paid you, I was trying to figure out what I'm supposed to pay. This is what was returned to me as the state treasurer of North Carolina. This is the master charge list. Every single page was redacted. This is an industry. We appreciate the services that we get from our healthcare workers, but this is an industry that operates in secrecy. And the people who are impacted most by secret contracts of healthcare are what I call the invisible, the lower income and fixed income people of this state who have to make a choice between mortgage and healthcare, food and healthcare, energy and healthcare. And so that's what we're trying to do with the state health plan. And to put this in context, I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to say this. Imagine this state health plan is almost the size of all the employees that work in the United States for Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, JP Morgan's, Jamie Dimon's JP Morgan, and Jeff Bezos's Amazon. If you add all those employees in the United States and those three companies up, that is almost equivalent to the buying power of the state health plan. And we need to be able to do it better and more efficiently on behalf of those that teach, protect, and otherwise serve. Because as Warren Buffett said 13 months ago, and Bill Gates said something similar 8 years ago, rising healthcare costs are the tapeworm on the U.S. economy. And think about how successful your council could be, because when jobs come to North Carolina, when companies come to North Carolina, they hire people. When they hire people, they generally provide them healthcare. When they provide them healthcare, that means more people in Western North Carolina who need healthcare can pay their bills. When more people who walk into healthcare providers can pay their bills, there's less write-offs. When there's less write-offs, they can lower the cost for everyone. That means more people can afford it. That's the plan, getting rid of secret contracts. And I know I'm getting ready to run out of time, and I see that Megan is on the Zoom. I just want to mention, go to NC Cash sometime. I don't want to stop what I'm getting ready to say to you. But I just want to mention that our thoughts, our prayers are with the Sheriff's Department of Henderson County, Sheriff Ryan Hendricks, who was killed in the line of duty this fall, and now Jared Allison, a deputy up in Nash County, who lost his life the day after Thanksgiving. Some of you, like myself, have experienced this, what we call the empty place setting. It's that first holiday where a person who always sat at a certain place at Thanksgiving and Christmas is no longer there, and they're never going to be there again. So I'd like for you to keep these communities in your thoughts and prayers. Anybody who's lost a loved one who's facing this for the first time this holiday season, but especially those that are killed, lost their lives in the line of duty. All these sheriff's departments are close. Rural sheriff's departments are even closer. Deputy Hendricks had two small children and a fiance who worked in that department. And just want to tell you to, I wear this mask in honor of Sheriff Hendricks every day. And I just want you to go and keep them in your thoughts and prayers. And I'd love to come back and visit with you on a regular basis.
Well, thank you, Treasurer Falwell, for joining us today. That's it's a sad but wonderful note to end this call as we remember Deputy Hendricks and all of those others who have given their life to defend our communities and our state and our nation. And we're so glad that you were able to join us. We're glad that you're feeling better. We know many others in our state are going through what you had to earlier this year, and our hearts and prayers are with their families right now. So you always have an open invitation to come join us at Landis-Sky Regional Council. And I think our chair, board chair is on the call, Mayor Volk from Hendersonville, and perhaps some of our other board members are representatives of our local governments. We might have even had, I think, a representative of some of our hospital systems. So you can talk to them after the call about pricing, but we're blessed with a wonderful healthcare community. And again, we hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season. We thank all of your staff at the State Treasurer's Office for the work they do every day to keep everything moving along and moving forward. And we're so grateful for your work on behalf of the state and our local governments. And thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Nathan. And sometimes we use the word no, and people think it's N-O, but most of the time it's K-N-O-W. They both sound alike, but when we say no to something, we try to tell people the K-N-O-W that's behind it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're welcome to come up here anytime. Be careful when you ride your motorcycle. And I think the Straightaway Cafe is in Broad River in Buncombe County. And you mentioned some other local establishments as well. So I know all of our friends and neighbors in Madison, Transylvania, Henderson, and Buncombe County would certainly welcome you to visit us when your schedule allows. And again, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate everyone who joined us for this call. We will have another call next week. We'll take a break around the Christmas holidays and start these calls again first of the year. But we will have a call next week. We'll share later on. We had our Board of Delegates meeting yesterday, and we were able to recognize some outstanding local government officials and those in our region who have served us. So we'll share that later on, but we were able to honor Senator Van Dyne and Representative McGrady, who are ending their service in the North Carolina General Assembly. We're able to honor Fletcher Town Council, Town Manager Mark Bieberdorf, Transylvania County Manager Jamie Lauder, and Henderson County Commissioner Bill Lapsley. And we were also able to honor the four public health directors in our region for the work they've done this past year. And we will share with you our annual report later on. You can go see that on our Landis-Sky YouTube channel. And we dedicate that annual report to the elected officials in our region who have passed away this year, which include Transylvania County Commissioner Will Cathy, Buncombe County Commissioner Mike Fryer, Henderson County Commissioner Charlie Messer, and Black Mountain Town Alderman Carlos Showers, as well as the former mayor of longtime mayor of Fletcher, Bill Moore. So we hope everyone has a safe rest of your day. Enjoy the beautiful sunshine. I know it's a little cold, but we hope you have a wonderful holiday season And always, if you have any questions or anything we can do to assist you, reach out to us at LandaSky. You can go on our website again at landasky.org. And my email is nathan@landasky.org. Again, thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Treasurer Falwell and Drew Christie from Governor Cooper's office. And everyone stay safe and have a wonderful rest of your day.